If anyone else had said this to him, Nate would have looked at him as at something uncovered beneath a rotten log and turned silently back to his work. In this case, Nate considered for a moment, then got up and took his jacket carefully off the back of the door, where he always hung it. He put it on. He adjusted the beanie on his head. Not even Skip dared say much about Nate's stubborn refusal to stop wearing his freshman beanie. When I asked Skip where his own had disappeared to, this was our third day at UM and the day after I met him, he said, "Wipe my ass with it and threw the fucker up a tree." This was probably not the truth, but I have never completely ruled it out either. We clattered down the three flights of stairs and went out into the mild October dusk. From all three dorms, students were headed toward Holyoke Commons, where I worked 9 meals a week. I was a dish line boy, recently promoted from silverware boy. If I kept my nose clean, I'd be a stack boy before the Thanksgiving break. Chamberlain, King, and Franklin Halls were on high ground. So was the Palace on the Plains. To reach it, students took asphalt paths that dipped into a hollow like a long trough, then joined into one broad brick way and climbed again. Holyoke was the biggest of the four buildings, shining in the gloom like a cruise ship on the ocean. The dip where the asphalt paths met was known as Bennett's Run. If I ever knew why, I have long since forgotten. Boys from King and Chamberlain came along two of these paths, girls from Franklin along the other. Where the paths joined, boys and girls did likewise, talking and laughing and exchanging looks both frank and shy. From there they moved together up the wide brick path known as Bennett's Walk to the Commons building. Coming the other way, cutting back through the crowd with his head down and the usual closed-off expression on his pale, harsh face, was Stokely Jones III. He was tall, but you hardly realized it because he was always hunched over his crutches. His hair, a perfect glossy black with not so much as a single observable strand of anything lighter, spilled over his forehead in spikes, hid his ears, inked a few stray strands diagonally across his pale cheeks. This was the heyday of the beetle haircut, which for most boys consisted of no more than combing carefully down instead of carefully up, thus hiding the forehead and a good crop of pimples more often than not. Stoke Jones was capped off by nothing so prissy. His medium-length hair just went where it wanted to. His back was hunched in a way that would soon be permanent if it wasn't already. His eyes were usually cast down, seeming to trace the arcs of his crutches. If those eyes happened to rise and meet your own, you were apt to be startled by their wild intelligence. He was a New England Heathcliff, only wasted away to a bare scrawn from the hips down. His legs, which were usually encased in huge metal braces when he went to class, could move, but only feebly, like the tentacles of a dying squid. His upper body was brawny by comparison. The combination was bizarre. Stoke Jones was a Charles Atlas ad in which before and after had somehow been melted into the same body. He ate every meal as soon as Holyoke opened, and even 3 weeks into our first semester, we all knew he did it not because he was one of the handicaps, but because he wanted, like Greta Garbo, to be alone.